I wanted to punch myself in the face for not thinking of it earlier. You're going to laugh. Or maybe you already know how I solved the problem, because it was so obvious to you. I started flying first class because I told people it was part of my travel requirements. Meaning, when companies reached out and said, "Hey, Rachel Hollis is the cat's pajamas, and we'd love to have her fire up our sales force. What would it take to get her here?" My assistant would tell them my speaking rate. And right after it, she'd add the line, "Plus, first class travel and accommodations." In the beginning, I was so nervous that people would be annoyed and that I'd miss out on big opportunities or be seen as a diva. But nobody batted an eyelash. First of all, when you've worked to get to a certain place in your career, it's not unusual to request perks you wouldn't have been given when you first started out. Secondly, brands could either afford it or they couldn't. But nobody got mad or sent the villagers to my house with pitchforks. Now, I get to fly in the big seats, and I arrive at each work event feeling good and productive and ready to go. In case you're wondering, I still have that line item on my list. I get to fly first class for work, but I'm not at a place with personal finances where we could do that for our family. Yet. Every day, I'm reminded about where we're headed. Now that you have your 10 dreams identified, I hope you take my advice and write them down every day. It's a great way to remind yourself daily about who you want to be, but in order to get there, you've got to tackle that list with action and focus. The next step is narrowing your focus down to one goal. 10, 10, 1. 10 years becomes 10 dreams becomes one goal. Your dream is your ideal. It becomes a goal when you actively begin to pursue it. One goal. I want you to ask yourself right now, what is one goal? One thing you can do that will get you closer to the 10 years from now version of yourself the fastest. What is the one goal out of the 10 you just finished identifying that you can work on this year? Think it over, then write it down. To achieve a goal, you need to make sure you have clarity on two things. What are the specifics, and how will you measure your progress? I want to lose weight is not specific. Do you want to lose 2 pounds or 100 pounds? That's specific. I want a body fat percentage of 24%. I want to save $5,000. Those are specific goals that you can measure against. I want to do better with my finances. That's garbage. You're already setting yourself up for failure, or you're setting up to give yourself credit for work without making measurable progress. Paying cash for your latte instead of using a credit card could be considered doing better on finances. But where is it getting you? If your goal is something more along the lines of, "I want to save $5,000, you wouldn't have a latte at all. Your goal also needs to be measurable. You have to be able to judge whether you're making progress or getting closer to where you want to be. A lot of people also say that a goal has to have a time limit, but I don't like that for personal goals because I feel like it sets you up for failure. If you tell yourself you've got to be in shape by the end of February, and then you get to mid-February and haven't done it, you beat yourself up. The intention here is that working on your ideal self is a lifelong process to become who you were meant to be. Lifelong processes don't have a time limit. All that matters is that you keep at it. We're not looking for perfection. We're looking for consistency. Now, it's not enough to know what your goal is going to be. Many of you probably knew what you wanted to achieve, and if that was all it took, you'd have already claimed it as your own. You've also got to know why you want it so badly. You need to define why it must be yours and use it as leverage to motivate yourself when you want to give up. Remember earlier when I talked about how important your why is? Why will keep you going even if you don't know how you'll get there. When I was a little girl, my parents fought a lot. These were extreme fights, punching holes in the walls kind of fights, and I would hide out in my room to get away from them. I would take myself into the only space that was mine alone, my bed, and I would escape by imagining a place where none of this existed. I would imagine a future where nobody screamed at each other. I would also imagine a future where nobody fought over money. As a child, the greatest vision I could imagine for myself was walking into a store and being able to afford anything I saw. I'm not talking about a watch or designer shoes. I mean being able to afford the brand name cereal or a new pair of jeans for school. That was the best version I could have for myself then. A home where nobody fought and the ability to afford things at Walmart. So that was my goal. And the underlying reason for it was something I remember thinking at a really early age. When I'm in charge, I can live whatever life I want. When you visualize your future, you have to know where it is you're trying to get to, and you have to give yourself some motivation to keep you on course. Said another way, you have to know your why. Why does it matter to you? It's not enough to just want to be thinner. It is enough to want to lose weight so you can be able to keep up with your kids or have energy for your life. That's leverage. It's not enough to say, I want to be rich, because I think that would be awesome. It is enough to know what it's like to go without as a kid and to promise yourself that you're never going to live this kind of life again once you have the ability to control it. That's leverage. You have to know where you're going and you have to know your why. For those of you who start and stop, start and stop, start and stop, if you've gone off your resolution 50 times before, it's because your why wasn't strong enough. I used to smoke. I hate to even admit that to you because it's absolutely terrible. Smoking is the worst. It's so disgusting. It's so bad for your body. But I was 19 when I started. I thought that cool kids smoked and I wanted to be cool. Then, one night at the company holiday party, I was chatting with this really rad girl who worked in the PR department. She was so hip. She was hipster before hipsters existed. And that night at the holiday party, she pulled out a pack of American Spirits. If you aren't familiar with American Spirits, they are basically straight tobacco. Way stronger than anything I had ever smoked before, only I didn't know that at the time. I'd been drinking too much that night, and when cool hipster girl offered me a cigarette, I didn't think anything of it, and proceeded to spend the rest of the evening smoking one cigarette after another. I went home from that party and threw up again and again. Everything smelled like that cigarette. I barfed until nothing was left inside my body. I woke up the next morning in my bed wearing nothing but red Isotoner socks. Best I can guess, I had gotten myself undressed down to the way I came into this world and then put on those socks for, I don't know, comfort. Then I puked for 3 hours before passing out. The point is, to this day, I cannot smell cigarette smoke without wanting to vomit. I never touched another cigarette again. I had had such a bad experience, had gotten to such a bad place that I went cold turkey and had zero issues giving it up. I will never go back there again. That's leverage. You have to have the leverage. You have to know your why, or you will never make change. You have to know what to focus on, or you will never make progress. Behavior 3. Embrace your ambition. Ambition is not a dirty word. I don't know if it's because I'm in the midst of writing this book and therefore am ever mindful of the conversations playing out in media right now regarding women, but it seems one popular female author and speaker after another is commenting on the type of women we should all aim to be. This morning, I saw yet another repost of a quote on the dangers and pitfalls of ambition in women. I was angry to the point of spitting and simultaneously so sad. Angry because I don't think it's helpful to make sweeping generalizations about all kinds of ambition and all kinds of women. Sad because this person has a powerful platform and a voice for women all over the world, and I believe this message is a disservice that plays deeply into the narrative many of us grew up with. Can ambition be dangerous? Absolutely. I've spoken at length about my own struggles with becoming a workaholic, so I know how dangerous and unhealthy that can be. But ambition as a whole, to call it out as utterly wrong feels short-sighted and counter to the call to live into who we were all made to be. It's important to note the comment wasn't directed toward men. It was calling out the dangers of ambition in women. We need to start having a very real conversation about why we accept truths about ourselves as women that we would never consider for men. If it's not true for everyone, then it shouldn't be true for anyone. I get that many people believe differently. I get that depending on where or how you were raised, the idea that we shouldn't hold ourselves to a different standard can seem downright heretical. But just consider it for a minute. When a man wants to push himself in his career, his fitness, his faith, his education, or anything else, this is considered an asset. We want those kinds of people leading our businesses, our churches, or our governments. Ambitious people work to learn more, do more, grow more, and typically they create opportunities for the people around them to do the same. But that's not okay for a woman? What if she's not married yet? What if she's a single mom? Is it okay for her to try hard then, at least until she's got a man to take care of her? I hope you heard the sarcasm in that last sentence, because the very idea makes my head want to explode. We need to get past the idea that certain rules only apply to certain people at particular life stages. If it's not true for all of us, it shouldn't be true for any of us. My sister-in-law, Heather, has been a teacher for the last 18 years. She was an All-American softball player before she got her bachelor's degree in elementary education. She went on to get her master's in school counseling, all while being an outstanding leader in education and a champion for the children in her care. That desire to learn more about her work so she can be more effective at it, that's ambition. And it shouldn't be any less admirable in her than it would be in her brother's. My friend Susan is leading the charge in foster care reformation. She's changing the way we love on children in care and surround foster parents with the support they need to do this work. Her ambition is off the charts. She has ambition to open up branches of her organization in every city in the United States. She has ambition to make sure every child in foster care feels loved and known and seen. She has ambition to make sure not one more child ages out of the system, ever. It's grandiose and audacious. Her brand of ambition will change the world. Another girlfriend is a stay-at-home mom who struggled for years with her weight and her self-image. 18 months ago, she signed up for her first 10K. Her ambition was to make it to the finish line. After she conquered that race, she signed up for a half marathon. She pushed herself to find the time to train and the will to learn how to get herself to her goal. She finished the half marathon and will complete her first full later this fall. Her ambition wasn't to be a CEO or make $1 million. Her ambition was to get fit and healthy so she could be a better woman for herself and mama for her kids. Her kind of ambition changed the family dynamic in her home and the way she looks at life. Ambition is not a bad thing. In fact, the definition is downright poetic. A strong desire to do or to achieve something, typically requiring determination and hard work. If it weren't for my ambition and determination to create content that would encourage other women, you wouldn't be sitting there listening to this book. I mean, we're basically halfway through it right now, so if you thought it was stupid or unhelpful or boring, presumably you would have given up by now. Chances are you're still here because you're getting something out of it. But there wouldn't be anything for you to consume if I hadn't been ambitious about writing it in the first place. So much of the time, though, we can see ambition as a good thing only until it's our own, right? It's never really other people's ambition that bothers us. It's our own that feels scary. What would they think of me if they knew this was my dream? We don't care about what they think, remember? Well, what if I get too ambitious and obsessive? Why don't we worry about things that are actually happening instead of possible somedays? Okay, but what if I do go crazy and chase my dream to the detriment of my family and my relationships? Crap, sister, me or someone else who loves you will come over and knock some sense into you. Are you really not allowing yourself to pursue something because of a bunch of made-up possibilities? Scratch that. Of course you are. You're scared. And I understand what it is to be scared of the unknown. But you're not going to achieve anything if you don't get comfortable with the idea of achievement. Do you have a goal or a dream? Are you trying to chase something down? Then you better get well acquainted with the idea of ambition. You need to adopt a posture of striving to grow in the ways that matter to your goals. Ambition looks like waking up early. It looks like working after the kids are in bed. Ambition looks like adopting a willingness to admit to the things you don't know and asking for help or doing the research or becoming your own best mentor. Ambition looks like you living in a way others won't, so you will have a life others can't. Are you ready to own your ambition? Behavior 4. Ask for help. It's the 11th hour, girls. I was supposed to have given my publisher the edits on this book last week. I had to ask for an extension, and that extension says that this sucker is due today if I want to make my publication date. I want to stress how late in the game I am on this creative process, because then you'll understand how insane it is for me to be adding this chapter right now. Like, I'm starting a chapter brand new when I'm supposed to have this whole thing safely tucked into an email and off to a lovely gal in Tennessee so she can copy edit it. Instead, I'm going rogue. And I'm doing it because it occurred to me this morning, like a light bulb going off, that I completely forgot to include an incredibly vital behavior that you absolutely must adopt into your life. For days, I've been wandering around thinking, I know I'm forgetting to tell them something. I just know it. And then I remembered what it was. And my only excuse for it not occurring to me originally is that it's such an ingrained behavior for me now that I didn't think about it as something extra to add in. But I get your DMs and your emails and your media-based emoji-filled messages that are full to the brim with overwhelm. And I am reminded that not every woman does this. So here it is. Ask for help. Ask for some dang help. You cannot listen to the chapter on ambition and allow it to fire you up if you aren't also going to figure out what resources you need to get you there. Deciding to take adult tap dancing lessons because they light your heart on fire doesn't just require new patent leather metal bottom shoes and a selection of Yelp recommended dance studios. It also requires someone to watch your kids while you go to class. Ask for help. Attempting to grow to a new level in your multi-level marketing business doesn't just require classes and webinars and a sick social media presence. It also requires someone to help you around the house since you will have less time for that. Ask for help. I get it, girls. I do. I know that it feels awkward for the vast majority of us to ask for assistance. For one thing, we hate admitting to anyone, especially ourselves, that we need it. For another, we've somehow gotten this twisted idea that copping to the fact that we can't successfully do it all means that we're weak. Ha! Think about how ludicrous that is. The most powerful people in the world have whole teams that they delegate to. They're getting help in every single direction, from cleaning their houses to expanding their businesses overseas. But you with your fledgling business, your loads of laundry, and your two kids under 4, you're the one who's supposed to navigate this all alone? Dude, no way! You've got a twisted perception of what success in any area of life looks like. And it's not even your fault, either. I blame the media. Or more specifically, I blame every perfectly styled, ultra-fabulous-looking woman who's ever been on TV or the internet in the last 15 years who didn't tell us how much assistance it takes to keep her at that level. I blame every magazine who showed us 39 ways to brine a turkey for Thanksgiving, but didn't mention asking your sister to stay the night with you the day before so someone was there to help you with the baby while you cook for the family. I blame every Nancy Meyers movie with those dreamy houses and all-white wardrobes. Oh, sure, she showed us the zany hardship of navigating a relationship, but she never once showed the staff of people required to keep those mansions clean or those organic gardens tended while our heroine was building up her catering empire. You've likely only ever seen examples, both in real life and on screen, of women doing it all. It seems to me that women either try and handle every single thing on their own and don't admit how much they're struggling, or worse, they have help, all kinds of help, and won't cop to it. Madeleine Albright once said, "There's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women." Well, I say, there's a special place in hell for women who have the luxury of assistance, but won't admit to other women that they do. I was watching a segment on the Today Show a couple of years back, and there was a famous celebrity there sharing her new product line. This woman had young children and a husband whose career was as lucrative and as demanding as her own. I really love this person. She's so beautiful, and she seems like such a genuinely good mama and wife. She's made a big name for herself in the lifestyle space. She has become the woman that many mamas and homemakers want to be. And when they asked her, in the course of the questions, how she does it all, as in, how did you build this multi-million dollar business and manage to parent well and be a great wifey? She looked right at the interviewer and said something like, "Oh, I'm just super organized." My jaw hit the floor, you guys. She went on to breezily explain how any mom can do just what she does if they apply themselves and work hard. I was so disappointed in her response, I wanted to cry. Sincerely wanted to cry like a baby. Because here's the deal. This woman has a massive platform, 10 times bigger than my own. And on that particular morning, I can't imagine how many women were watching her, looking up to her, and hoping for some guidance or inspiration. And she evaded. She had the opportunity to tell all of us what it really takes to live life and have a business at this level while raising young children, and she didn't take it. There is a 0% chance, a 0% chance that she doesn't have help. Having spent years and years working with celebrities, I'd guess she's got a housekeeper and at least one nanny, if not two. She's got to have an assistant, and because of their level of celebrity, I bet she and her husband even have some of the higher-level domestic staff you might not have even heard of before. Things like house managers and nutritionist chefs. And you know what? Good for them! I do not begrudge them a single second for their help. I just wish they'd talk about it. By not talking about it, they run the risk that it won't occur to you. If you see their perfectly prepared dinner on Instagram when you know she was at a photo shoot all day because you watched it in her feed, it might make you feel bad because you struggle to get dinner on the table even when you've been home all day. It might not occur to you that a housekeeper or a chef helped her prepare that dinner, which perpetuates the myth that you could also do it all and have it all if only you'd work harder. This is a lie from the pits of celebrity hell. Friends, women operating at the levels you'd like to be, both personally and professionally, are asking for help. Maybe that help comes from their partner. Maybe that help comes from their mama or their sister. Maybe that help comes in the form of a local college student who babysits or a local cleaning lady who scrubs their toilets once a month. There are tons of ways to get help, but to start, we need to understand that it's required in the first place before we can take the next step. Nobody does this alone. When I put it so plainly, it seems like common sense, doesn't it? But then we come across terms like self-made and start to wonder whether that's still what we should be shooting for. I love the term self-made, particularly when it's used in reference to my own success, because only I know how much work it took to get from there to here. I was the one who got up before the sun. I was the one who logged all the miles on business trips. I was the one who cried over the P&L and stressed about making payroll. Me, me, me. For years, I held on to that title and the idea of doing it all on my own because it fired me up and helped keep me going when it felt so lonely on this entrepreneurial journey. In the last few years, I've realized something, though. I am self-made and also not. It's only recently that I understood that no one is ever truly self-made because it's impossible to build big things entirely by yourself. A whole team of people helped me build my company over the last decade, a massive tribe who started out as a handful of followers, told their friends about my work, and are still the greatest hype squad I know. It took family and babysitters and nannies to help keep our family afloat during the times I had to put in extra hours. It took the world's biggest cheerleader as a husband, celebrating my wins and covering my losses both financially and emotionally in those early years. It took a village, and it still takes a village. It took me raising my hand and asking for help. Hey, hubby, can you help watch the kids this weekend so I can get some work done? Hey, Instagram friends, can you share this in your social media feeds to let people know about this book I wrote called Party Girl? Hey, manager at work, I can meet all of your priorities, but not without another team member or an extension on the due date. I'm only one person. When I wanted to train for a half marathon, I asked someone on Dave's team at work if he could coach me. The only thing I knew about him was that he was a marathon runner. Ken taught me everything I know about running long distance. When I wanted to write that first book, my mom came to town many, many weekends and helped with the boys so I could write. She would show up in our upstairs bedroom with snacks at almost the exact moment I was ready to throw the computer against the wall. When this company I've built started to scale so big and so fast that I didn't think I could properly run it alone anymore, I swallowed a massive amount of ego and asked my husband for help. Do you know how much pride I had being a female founder and CEO with a high school education? A lot. Do you know how interested I was in admitting to him, to myself, or to you that I couldn't continue to lead the company and lead this tribe simultaneously? Not interested at all. But the thing is, I've learned over the last decade how easy it is to burn out, or worse, give up on your dream because you're trying to do too many things at once. So I've learned, and I ask for help. I have help, you guys. I have so much dang help, and I'm always looking for ways to free up more of my time so I can focus on my values. People ask me all the time how I do it all, and I'm happy to shout it from the rooftops. I don't. We have a full-time nanny, and we've had one since our oldest was 3 months old. Because of moves or additional kids added to our family, we've had 3 separate nannies, though not all at once, in our history as a family. These women, Martha, JoJo, and now Angie, have loved my children well and made it possible for me to pursue my career while Dave pursued his. They came in early and stayed late. They allowed us to have weekly date nights, and occasionally they stayed the night so we could get away. We have never had family nearby who could help with our children, and these women were our surrogate family. I can't imagine how we would have managed without them. 3 years ago, we hired a housekeeper, full time. We talked about and planned for years to get to the place financially where we could afford a full-time housekeeper, and it's the greatest luxury in our life. The more kids we had, the less we wanted to spend our nights and weekends doing laundry and mopping floors. We also craved help with dinners and grocery shopping and someone who would take our minivan or our mini schnauzer to get washed. I have an assistant at work as well as a team of people at the Hollis Company who support me in my business endeavors. I use stylists to pick out flattering outfits for me when I go to fancy red carpet events or on TV shows. I use hair and makeup people when I'm going to be on television, and a few times I've had a woman come to my home and give me a spray tan in my bathroom. She had a pop-up tent. I thought it was magical. If this much help seems excessive, I'd challenge you to weigh it against the level of content we've been able to push out into the world over the last 5 years. I wouldn't have been able to do a tenth of this work if I hadn't had help. If this much help seems unnecessary, well, dang, sis, you don't have to go full tilt like I do. But please teach yourself to raise your hand and admit where you're struggling. You don't need to be in a specific financial place to get help. You can trade with a friend or simply ask your partner for more support. You do need to be in a specific emotional place to get help. You do need to realize that while you are blazing a new trail for yourself, you aren't required to walk down it alone. The point in all of this long and crazy rant is that if you struggle with admitting that you need help, you have to take a good, hard look at what is required to get you to the next level. If there's a time commitment involved and you already feel like you don't have enough time, you might need to ask for help. If there's a level of knowledge involved that you don't already have, you might need to find a teacher. If there's a promotional level involved, you might need to ask your existing customers if they'd be willing to help you get it out into the world. I heard once that most people who choke to death on food do it in close proximity to someone who could have saved them. It's a horrible reality. What happens is that they're sitting at a table, eating with a group, and when they begin to choke, they feel embarrassed that they're struggling. Inevitably, they stand up from the table, and when their friends ask if they're okay or need help, they wave them away like everything's fine. They go to another room so their struggle won't be a bother to anyone. It's not until they're alone and really fighting for breath that they realize they need assistance, but by then, it's too late. Friends, your struggles don't mean that you're weak. They mean you're human. Your inexperience doesn't mean you won't succeed. It just means you haven't yet. Stop pretending. Stop faking it. Stop suffering in silence. Stop setting yourself up as a martyr. Stop taking it all on alone and then feeling bitter about it. Stop wasting your time on activities you hate as penance for the time you want for yourself. You cannot do enough loads of laundry to make your husband support your dream. You cannot volunteer enough hours at church to make your sister understand your goals. You cannot earn your way to autonomy over your own life. It's a human right you were granted when you became an adult. If you need to, when you need to, raise your hand and ask for help, regardless of what anyone else thinks about it. There are 100 ways to learn to swim and one very easy way to drown. And that is by being unwilling to admit you're drowning in the first place. Behavior 5. Build foundations for success. I spent years talking to women about how to reach for growth without realizing that many of them didn't have a strong foundation to keep up with their goals, even if they were motivated. The truth is, it doesn't matter if you're motivated to achieve a goal if your day-to-day life is going to sabotage you before you get very far. This lack of foundation wasn't even something I put a name to until I started to dig into the reasons women would list for why they were having so much trouble. The things we need in place before we can pursue our dreams are not what we often think of in relation to success. Typically, we just think of them as parts of life. But if we don't have these foundational elements squared away on the front end, reaching for anything else can feel like too much of a long shot. We have to do the necessary initial work if we're going to move forward in other ways. We need to set ourselves up to win. Think about it this way. You're like a vase. I heard this one time and I thought this was the greatest analogy ever. Imagine that you're a glass vase and you're standing up tall and someone is pouring water into you. That water is everything you could possibly need to survive. So you, as the glass vase, are filled with life and energy and nutrients and love and joy, all the good things. But we women often don't think about ourselves as much as we worry about everyone else. So we try and lean over. We tip our vases forward and backward and side to side so that the good things we're receiving will spill out to those around us. We give some to our children or our coworkers or our parents or our friends. We keep tipping ourselves over. We tip it a little bit here. We spill a little bit there. And eventually, the vase falls over and breaks into 1,000 pieces. We spend so much effort trying to take care of others that we destroy ourselves in the process. But here's the incredible thing. If you're a vase, and you just stand up tall and proud on a firm foundation, if you just take in all the things that are being poured into you, what will eventually happen to the water in the vase? It will overflow and spill out to everyone around you. I know this is one of those things we hear all the time, and you're like, yeah, I got it. I'm here to tell you, no, you don't got it. You don't. I'm challenging you right now. If you are uncomfortable, if you are aching, if you are tired, if you are anxious, if you are depressed, if you are suffering in any way, you're not standing firmly on a strong foundation and letting your vase overflow. You're not setting yourself up for success, but you can. And here are some tangible steps you can take to do just that. Get healthy. I can't think of anything that's as important to ensure success as feeling great both physically and emotionally. It's certainly possible to achieve a goal even when you're not operating at the highest level, but it's way harder than it needs to be. You can drive with a flat tire, but when the car is fine-tuned and the gas tank is full, you can fly. Over the last decade, I've worked so hard to get physically and emotionally healthy. And while the road from there to here was filled with personal awareness and hard work and gobs of therapy, there are a handful of practical things I've identified as game changers for health that you too can implement. These are the 5 things I changed in my life over the years that made me feel physically capable of taking on all my big dreams. These are the 5 to thrive elements I mentioned earlier. 1. Hydration. Drink half your body weight in ounces of water every single day. Let's do easy math. Let's say you weigh 100 pounds. You're going to divide that in half. That's 50. So you should drink 50 ounces of water every single day to stay hydrated. At this point, I always get asked the same question. Doesn't that mean you have to pee all day? Yes, that's the point. It flushes all the bad stuff out of your body. Hydration is important for so many reasons, but it's especially important for those of you who are struggling with weight loss. Being dehydrated feels a lot like being hungry. Chances are you're not hungry, you're thirsty, but your brain doesn't know the difference, which is why you're struggling so much with portion control. Try drinking a bottle of water and then seeing if you still need food. Or you might be like, I want this goal. I want this plan. I want to have a better life. I want to get promoted. I want to do this. But you don't have the energy and you keep giving up on your dreams and nothing seems to be working. You don't understand why, but you also haven't had water since last Tuesday. And that was only because you got some in your mouth when you were brushing your teeth. Hydration is one of those foundational elements for success. So whenever someone wants to start a new plan, whatever it may be, I always recommend they begin with this little step. Just drink your water. And once you tackle that and make it a habit, you'll feel ready to move on to tougher things. 2. Wake up earlier. The second thing that you're going to do as you establish a healthier physical environment is to get up an hour earlier and use that time for yourself. I think this is especially powerful for those of you who are moms. I know I shouldn't make sweeping generalizations about other people's families, but I'm going to stand firm on this idea. If your kid wakes you up in the morning, you're screwed. You are. You're already behind the eight ball. If the baby is crying or a toddler woke you up asking for Cheerios, you're starting your day on the defensive instead of on the offensive. That extra hour in the morning before your family gets up is key. It's everything. Those of you who say you don't have any time for yourself, this is the time. If you want to work out, if you want to read a book, if you want to pray, if you want to write your first novel, if you want to have time to pursue your goals, get up an hour earlier. Now, inevitably, when I talk about waking up earlier, I always get a few notes from women saying something along the lines of, I have a 6-week-old baby and I'm struggling to wake up an hour earlier because I only got 2 hours of sleep last night. What are you talking about right now? What in the holy world? If you have a baby under 9 months of age, this number on the list is not meant for you. Just wait until they're older and then try. Be gracious with yourself. I love that you're trying to push yourself into something new, but these are not adjustments you can make if you are currently going through a massive life change. So if you've got a new baby, this one is not for you. Maybe what you're thinking instead is, I'm a doctor and I get up at 3 a.m. already. Well, gosh, I definitely don't want you to be up at 2 a.m., but maybe for you, this step looks like finding some time for yourself later in the day. Come on, friend. We're just looking to carve out an hour of time somewhere to pursue what's on your heart. That's all I want you to do. If you don't have an hour to spare, you don't have a life. I piss people off when I say that. They're like, you don't know me. You don't know my schedule. You're right. I don't know you. But what I do know is that if you can't find a single hour for yourself in a 24-hour period, you need to look at your priorities. You need to ask yourself what you are doing with your time. 3, give up one category of food for 30 days. So we're going to drink water. We're going to get up an hour earlier, and then we're going to focus on nutrition with this easy elimination. I want you to give up food. One category of crappy food for 30 days. Have you ever heard that saying that if you can give up something for a month, it becomes a habit? Well, I want you to make a habit of not eating garbage. Garbage, in this instance, is fast food or processed food or anything Krispy Kreme makes. And the thing is, I don't even want you to give up everything or figure out a new diet because that can be overwhelming, particularly if you're also trying to chase down a goal. I just want you to choose one tiny baby category and then avoid it like a biblical plague. If you can give up something, like truly give it up, no cheating, it becomes a habit. I hate to say the word cheat, but if you break this promise to yourself, it's done. It won't stick. For most things in life, if you mess up, I'm likely to simply say, get back up, get back up, get back up. But if you can't stick on this number, you've got to start again at the beginning of your 30 days. The challenge to you is, can you keep a promise to yourself for a month? I don't even care if you replace it with something else. I don't care if you're like, well, I can't have Diet Coke, so I'm going to have lemonade, which is full of sugar, but whatever, at least it's not full of chemicals. This isn't about what you're giving up. This is about proving to yourself that you can keep your word and proving to your stomach that it can, in fact, survive without Chick-fil-A sauce for an extended period of time. 4, move your body every day. So you're going to drink water. You're going to wake up an hour earlier. You're going to give up a category of food for 30 days. And you are going to move your body. No, you don't have to do CrossFit or sign up for a boot camp where they scream at you for an hour. I mean, unless that's your thing. But you do need to move your body for 30 minutes every single day. And let me say this right now. If you cannot find the time and the energy and the willpower to move your body for 30 minutes a day, 7 days a week, we have a problem. We have a really big problem. I'm not asking you to run a marathon. I'm asking you to move. I know that there are 100 million distractions that encourage you to lie around and watch television or scroll through your phone. But if that's the only thing you do in your downtime, you're depleting yourself of energy. You don't have to be a certain size or a certain weight, but you do have to have energy. You are a freaking animal. An animal, like a cheetah or an antelope or a wolverine. There are no overweight animals in nature. It's not a thing. The only overweight animals that exist are the ones that live in our houses with us. Animals are not overweight. Pets are overweight. You are not a pet. You are a powerful, beautiful, bold woman, and you will treat yourself as such. Studies have been done on the highest performers, the people who are the greatest athletes, the greatest businesswomen, the greatest in the world. Out of the highest performing people, it's something like 97%, I swear, you can look this up, who work out at least 5 days a week. It's not because those people were given some special workout genes that you don't have. It's because those people know that energy begets energy. You want to achieve your goal? Get moving for those 30 minutes every day and make sure your body is ready to act on the vision you have for your life. 5. Practice gratitude daily. The fifth thing I want you to do is arguably the most important. Every single day, I'm going to ask you to write down 10 things you are grateful for. Put it in your phone. Write it down in a journal. However you want to do it, but take 12 minutes and list these things out. Don't list big things, like that you're grateful for your partner or that you're grateful for your ability to breathe. Write down things that happened today. Things like how good your cup of coffee was. Or how someone let you in on the freeway when there was heavy traffic. Or that you got to see a friend. Or that your 5-year-old told you a terrible joke and you laughed even though it wasn't funny. The idea is, if you know that at the end of the day you're going to have to list out points of gratitude, you will spend your day looking for blessings. If you spend your day looking for blessings, here's the magic. You'll find them. When you live your life in a state of gratitude, it changes everything. From a place of feeling immensely blessed, we see immense possibility. We believe good things are possible and maybe even likely to happen to us. When it comes to setting the foundation to succeed, it helps if you believe that your success is likely. If you don't do anything else on this list, just do this one thing. If you don't feel like you can do all 5 things, just try that last one about gratitude and do it consistently for a month. I suggest a month because in my own life, I found that if I can do anything regularly for 30 days, it sticks. When you practice gratitude consistently for a month, add in the water, then maybe the workout. This is about setting yourself up for success. You can certainly pursue your goals when you're struggling physically or emotionally. But when you're taking care of yourself, you have the exponential energy to keep up with your vision. Get your personal space in order. Being a little girl in a house that was at times utter chaos meant that I grew up often feeling unsafe. But the one thing that I could control was my bed. So I made my bed every single day. When I grew up and got my first apartment, it was in a crappy part of town. In fact, it was actually a crappy apartment in a crappy part of town, but that apartment was always clean. This was something I could control. Your home is something you can control. Of all the things in your life, it's the one you have the easiest access to. Years ago, I was watching the Oprah Winfrey Show, and she said, "Your home should rise up to meet you." If your home feels like chaos, or it's dirty, or it's unorganized, you need to wake up. If you keep scrolling through Instagram looking at other women's pretty lives so you don't have to acknowledge that yours is a mess, you need to wake up. Your home is a reflection of what's going on inside your head and your heart. If life feels out of control, start taking control with your immediate environment. I know there are people listening to this who don't have a home, who don't have access to everything, who have one tiny square surrounded by a sea of chaos. To you, I'd say, take care of the spaces that are yours, be that your bed, your car, or your desk at work. Organize your life. Keep your spaces clean. Put some effort into their appearances. These things are about self-respect and about setting a certain standard for yourself, for your life, for your children. That doesn't cost money. Self-respect doesn't cost anything other than effort. Clean up. The other thing to keep in mind about your personal spaces is that they not only need to be organized and clean, but they need to be filled with reminders of the vision you have for your future life. When I open up my closet doors, I have bulletin boards with pictures pinned that reflect my bigger vision for the future because I want to remind myself every day what I'm working toward. I use images and words. My car and my office and even my bathroom mirror are filled with words and quotes that inspire me. This entire chapter is about setting yourself up to reach for success by building a solid foundation. The spaces you inhabit can be the platform that you build a new life on, or they can be the anchor that keeps pulling you back under the waves. Build a great community. You are a combination of the five people you hang out with most. Think about it. Who do you see most often? Whose words are you consuming frequently? Which points of view and perceptions do you take in on the regular? Is there someone amongst those five you interact with regularly who is above you in life? Meaning, is there something about them that you want to aspire to? Do they have skills or characteristics that you'd be proud to adopt? When you hang out with those people, is there an area in your life that they're going to pull you up toward? If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. If you're the most focused on growth in your group of friends, if you're the highest achiever, if you're the most compassionate, if you're doing the best out of everyone, you're in the wrong room. You should want to surround yourself with people who are better than you in the areas you want to improve in. You should hope that your good stuff rubs off on them and their good stuff rubs off on you. But if everyone in your circle looks to you to motivate them, you're outnumbered. They're much more likely to pull you down to their level than you are to pull them up to yours. It's worth saying here that I'm not suggesting that you let go of the relationships that you have simply because someone isn't as advanced as you are or as focused on growth. I am suggesting that you make sure you are regularly interacting with people who are leading the charge in an area you'd like to grow into. I want to hang out with other women or other couples who exemplify the traits I would want to have as a mom, as a wife, as a woman in business, and as a friend. If you want to grow in your career, but all your friends are still living at home with no plans to do much with their lives, how supportive are they able to be? If your friends, the ones who advise you and offer counsel, don't believe in marriage, how much great advice are they going to offer you for yours? I remember one summer we were on vacation in Hawaii, and it was during a really rough season in our marriage. I went into the vacation already feeling frustrated with Dave, and that much time together only brought it into sharper relief. I was so annoyed with him that it colored every part of that vacation. About halfway through the trip, some of my best friends came to visit us, and I went to pick them up from the airport. I had been waiting for days, thinking, great. My girls are coming, and I'm going to unload on what a terrible human this man is, and they're going to be like, yes, screw him. Plus, they're lesbians, so I figured they'd be even more into the whole husbands are the worst diatribe I had going on in my head. I had a whole plan. Then, we got into the car where I started making known all my frustrations. Bless. Seriously, God bless these women, because they immediately started speaking truth into what I would want for a marriage. They reminded me what grace looks like, and that we all have hard times. They reminded me that when things are the toughest, that's when you should most be seeking out your partner. They reminded me who it is I want to be. Now, if I had gotten into a car with best friends who were people with a totally opposite view on what it is to have a strong and beautiful marriage, we would have gotten out of that car in a totally different headspace. They would have fanned the flames of my anger. They would have made the situation worse. It would have been so easy to do. Are your friends pulling you up or dragging you down? You are the combination of the five people you hang out with most. Choose wisely. Develop great habits. In order to get from where I was to where I wanted to be, I had to learn about habits. I had to learn to change the bad habits I had been practicing, and I had to learn how to develop the good habits I needed to get ahead. So many people think that one thing, one opportunity, is going to make them a success at everything. The reality is that success comes by doing 50 things over and over and over. Intensity is not as important as consistency. The thing about consistency is that you do it for a while, and it seems like nothing is happening. Nothing's happening, and then all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, where did that come from? What habits do you have right now that are going to help you get where you want to go? Having a good life is about developing good habits. But what exactly is a habit? A habit is a series of three things: a cue, an action, a reward. A cue means that something happens. It's a trigger for you. It signals to your brain that it's time to start the action. Then, when you take the action, totally unconsciously, by the way, you're given some type of reward. A cue, an activity, a reward. For instance, I spent many years as an emotional eater. When you're an emotional eater, every single kind of emotion is a cue to eat something. If you're sad, you eat. If you're happy, you eat. If you're anxious, you should eat. If you're mad, you should eat. And then you should have Oreos. I had learned somewhere along the way that food was the only thing I had easy access to that would make me feel better. So when I became an adult, whenever I had anxiety or fear, I would go to the kitchen at 11 o'clock at night and binge eat everything. My cue was feeling anxious. My activity was eating. And the reward was that I felt better. For a brief period of time, I would get a high from eating all that food, and that high made me feel happy. But the problem with most terrible habits is that as the high from your reward starts to die off, it actually triggers the cue again. So for me, I would eat an entire sleeve of Ritz crackers and half a tub of cream cheese, and it would make me so happy. Then 20 minutes would go by, and I'd start thinking, you're a piece of crap. You blew your diet. You've been working so hard and you just threw it all away. You're garbage. The negative self-talk would start, and then I'd think, well, dang, we're already here. Let's have dessert. And then I would eat dessert and feel really good again, but eventually circle back around. I would trigger myself again and again and again until I finally understood that the issue wasn't stress. The issue was the activity I was unconsciously choosing once the stress had been cued. I couldn't change that life was going to happen and that there would be times when I would feel scared or sad or anxious. What I could change, however, was the action I took in response to that cue. Now, when I have anxiety, I go on a long run. I go work out. By the way, I used to hate people who were like, if you feel stressed, go work out. I'd think, screw you, Pam. We're not all made like that, okay? Except